You are listening to Destination Church Belfast weekly podcast. You can find us at www.destinationchurchbelfast.co.uk. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook. Happy listening.
Okay, so today is the last in our message series on Psalm 23. Good crowd participation moment. We're all learning. So, we have learned, haven't we, that each verse of Psalm 23 is interconnected and builds upon the previous. The first being, the Lord is my shepherd. So let me read it to us again. You can do whatever you do to listen as best you can. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I'll dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So the psalm has this progressive layering on the reality and truth of the opening verse that the Lord is my shepherd, and it all hinges there. And we are discovering, I think our whole journey is discovering, that the shepherd thinks very, very differently to the way we do. For my thoughts aren't your thoughts, neither are my ways your ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts and your thoughts. Are you starting to now have that in place and therefore expecting that what God is doing will be likely very different to how you're thinking about it? Or are we still expecting that God's going to do things the way that we do, when it's actually very, very liberating when you realize he's totally other to us, and when we follow him, then our souls respond and there's restoration. To be able to think differently, you and I have to die to our self-interest, which is an ongoing process, John 12, 24 and 25. And the only way that we can die in a healthy way, because if we believe in our souls that we have to die, then our soul's going to direct us as to what that death is, and that death isn't going to be helpful. So even the death to our self-interest has to be spirit-inspired, and he is more than able to help you die. Here's the gospel. That's good news, isn't it? The life afterwards is even better. Dallas Willard said, it's not the death of self, but the death to self and the no longer domination of your soul. It's the leadership of his spirit with our spirit. And last week, we looked in detail at the enemy, the table, the fragrance, and the cup. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, and my cup runs over. And I commented that there's the shift from the shepherd to the host of the banquet. And verse 5 is all about what God does to us and how it affects us. And I put the point across that God is up to something in the presence of your enemies. And the word in the Hebrew for prepare is arak, which is to arrange or set in order. So God is arranging and ordering things when the enemy is within your sight. You know, when you're going, I don't understand why things are like this and why it's not going away and it doesn't feel good and it just feels like you're stuck in this. And it's hassle, and there's maybe a bit of torment in there. Well, have faith and take courage. God is always up to something in the presence of your enemies. And for some reason, we've already said that the shepherd thinks differently to us, but for some reason, God favors working in adverse conditions, and it all seems at the wrong place at the wrong time. But God forces the enemy to be a reluctant witness to his love and care for humanity. And when you read it, it says that God prepares a table for us in the presence of our enemies. And I think that the other is also true. God has the enemy present and pops his table and his goodness in front of the enemy to continually remind him who actually wins in the end. God has certain feasts for you that can only be eaten when the enemy's around. and you anoint my head with oil. And the reference there is not to a kingly anointing. It's a reference to the perfumes that were regularly accompanying an Oriental banquet, which is totally out of our culture. When you arrived at a banquet in those days and in that part of the world, they anointed you with sweet perfumes that were significant and really initiated and told you that you're at a joyous banquet. And I commented, when you smell that smell, whatever your favorite smell is, where does it take you? So God wants to jar us from being aware solely of the presence of the enemy into the abundance of his table and what he has for us. The ample cup, the cup is given as a plentiful portion, and it's given to you by the master of the feast. It's given to you, and it's present, and it has absolutely everything that you need. And just to back that up, I read you 2 Peter 2:3. For his divine power has bestowed on us absolutely everything necessary for a dynamic spiritual life and godliness through true and personal knowledge of him who called us by his own glory and excellence. So easy to read. But if you are sitting here today or standing here and you're thinking, I don't have what I need. Well, the truth is saying that you have absolutely everything necessary for a dynamic spiritual life. So we've got to realign ourselves and find where the disconnect is so that we are living the abundance that is intended for us. Not that we deny negative realities, because they're negative realities. There are valleys and there are enemies, but there's also a God who is more than enough. Anybody like to venture a little? Amen. Today we're talking about it's better than you think. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Or as the Amplified says, surely or only goodness, mercy, and unfailing love shall follow me all the days of my life. And through the length of my days, the house of the Lord and his presence shall be my dwelling place. This is it. This is the summary of all that David has said up to this point, and this is the climax of his experience and understanding of God. And he is completely certain. Surely. Are you completely certain? Where's your surelies? Are your surelies rested in, surely this isn't going to last? Or is it, surely this is going to stop? Or is it, surely you're good? The Lord is my shepherd. And the only reason that David can say the surely is because he's come to the place of conclusion and certainty that the Lord is my shepherd. Remember early on? The Lord is my shepherd. Did you miss that one, Paula? Was that one? The Lord is my... Works either way, the small finger or the big finger. But you're allowed to use the big finger. Or you can incorporate your thumb and start on your second finger there. The Lord is my shepherd. But ask yourself the question, do you remember, not even know, do you remember that he is your shepherd? He's yours, no matter what happens. You need to know the answer to that question. And are you and I more certain of the difficulty of life and the activity of the enemy? Psalm 23:6, this is the soul's translation. Surely adversity, difficulty, and disappointment will follow me all the days of my life, and maybe at the end I'll get to heaven. If you've lived long enough and you've lived through COVID and different things going on, is that maybe not truer to your own understanding? And yet here we are saying that surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. So let's be honest about where our souls want to go, and let's choose the Spirit. The two are both present, but we get to choose which one we're going to yield to. Like Joshua said to the people, and I think I said this last week, life or death, we've a choice and we get to make it. David hasn't put a false positive spin on life. He's been real with us in this psalm. The confusing, circuitous paths, the valleys, the darkness, the activity of the enemy. But he's discovered the reality and is choosing life and believing the truth which is setting him free, that love wins. God is in control and he is so very, very good. And as I came to prepare this, the rumbling narrative that I believe the Spirit wants to give this morning was not the obvious one. This is Mind Matters 101. Hold every thought captive and lead it away to the obedience of Jesus Christ. Anybody know the address of that verse? 2 Corinthians 10:5. Philippians 4, verse 8, finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Whatever you've learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice. And Romans 12, 2, do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. So we've got the adverse difficulty and the dark valleys, and we've got the presence of the Spirit of God and what we've been directed to do. And the two feel in conflict with each other. The reason they feel in conflict to each other is because they most absolutely are. So we've got to pick which side that we want to be on. So what would you say in summary of your expectations of your life in God? Does the presence of the enemy feel more certain than the presence of God? And if that's the case, without condemnation, you need to discover what the disconnect is. This whole message is about raising our expectations. Ephesians 3:20, now to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we can ask or imagine, according to his power that is at work within us. Close your eyes and listen, right? I'm going to take my iPad out of this and wander around. Okay, you listening? Now, to him who is able to do immeasurably more, what does that look like for you? Immeasurably more than you can ask or you can imagine, according to his power that is work within us. What is your immeasurably more? Now, to him who is able, not possibly, not maybe, he is able to do, to act, to be practical, to make it happen, immeasurably more than all we can ask or imagine according to his power that is at work within us. I don't care whether it's a soulish desire. If you take your soulish desire in front of the presence of God, do you not think that your Father is able to mold those desires into the desires of your heart in the way that he wants to give them to you? What is your immeasurably more? And are you asking and are you imagining what he could possibly do? Because you can't. It's more than that. And it's scary communicating this because life's rough and it's difficult, but that's of the soul. God is able to do immeasurably more than you can ask or imagine according to his power that it is work within us. So here's the dare. Will you believe that? Will I believe that? Will we, after 41 years in my experience, go, do you know what? Those things haven't happened and therefore it's time to give up and just accept that life is as it is. Or do we gun for immeasurably more than we can ask or imagine? If I was you, I would take what you're asking or imagine for, add 100 or a couple of 100% on top of that, and then dream that it would be better than that. What do you think? We say that we are biblically based. And we say that he is who he says he is. And I really believe that what we are all being challenged with is, am I as good as I say that I am? We are to expect more of him than we think is possible. So raise your expectations of him. Live in the real world where anything is possible. And you must ask, and you must expect, and you mustn't stop. Are you hurt and disappointed? It's not over. Let him bring healing. Expect more, because there is more. Goodness and mercy are chasing me down. The enemy may well be after us, but that's not where our focus should be. And as God's children, we are being hunted by stronger forces than what the enemy can bring. There are stronger forces chasing after you than evil. And I want to read you this excerpt from Exodus. It's a little bit long, but bear with me. When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh and his officials changed their minds about them and said, "What have we done? We've released Israel from serving us." So Pharaoh prepared his chariot and took his army with him. He took 600 of the best chariots and all the other chariots of Egypt with officers over them all. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up and saw the Egyptians marching after them. And they were terrified and cried out to the Lord, full stop, and they said to Moses, "Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us into the wilderness to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Did we not say to you in Egypt, 'Leave us alone so that we may serve the Egyptians'? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness." But Moses told the people, "Do not be afraid. Stand firm and you will see the Lord's salvation, which he'll accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only be still." Then the Lord said to Moses, hear God's tone, "Why are you crying out to me? Tell the Egyptians to go forward. And as for you, lift up your staff, stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it so that the Israelites can go through on the dry land. And I'll harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they'll go in after them. Then I will gain honor by means of Pharaoh and all his army and chariots and horsemen. The Egyptians will know that I'm the Lord when I am honored through Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea so that the waters may flow back over the Egyptians and their chariots and the horsemen." So Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and at daybreak the sea returned to its normal state. As the Egyptians were retreating, the Lord swept them into the sea. The waters flowed back and covered the chariots and horsemen. The entire army of the Pharaoh that had chased the Israelites into the sea, not one of them survived. What's chasing you? What's the threat? What has negatively pursued with threat will be swallowed up by the greater force of God's activity if you keep going. If you keep going. If you stop, it won't. Those threats will continue to either manifest themselves in reality or chase you down. If you keep going on the circuitous path, understand that it's not straightforward. When God says he will bring the mountains low and he will make the valleys raised up and the crooked paths will be made straight, he may well mean that he's added in his kingdom some more bends in the road and you will benefit by following them. What has negatively pursued with threat will be swallowed up by the greater force of God's activity if you keep going on the path. If you keep going, you've got to keep going. Let me implore you by the Spirit, you must keep going. You must not give up. If you're hearing the roar of the Pharaoh behind you demanding you go back, keep walking one foot in front of the other and there'll be a different roar, and that roar of the Spirit of God will swallow up the enemies that have been hunting you all of your life. Goodness and mercy. The Hebrew for good means pleasant and agreeable to the senses, and it's not some theological reshuffling to prematurely draw goodness from evil. You know when you say to somebody, "How are you?" and you're like, "Oh, the Lord's going to work through this." And I'm like, "We're not there yet. Really where we are is you're in pain and this is awful. And you need somebody to say, it's painful and it's awful and I'm sorry you're going through it." When God says that he's good, he means good. And some of the interpretations of that word good are to the senses, to the smell, to the taste, to the time and the place, to people. It's goodness through and through, practical goodness. Mercy, well, it's the kindness of men towards men in favors and benefits, and it's the kindness of God to the needs of his creatures. You and I are being chased down by supernatural forces with the determined intent. Goodness and mercy. So let yourself be caught by them. Let the hounds of heaven lick you to the death of your self-interest. It's hard sometimes when people want to be good to us, isn't it? when somebody wants to come along and say, I want to give you this. Everything in us wants to give something back. We're saying, no, I couldn't possibly. What I would counsel you to do is say thank you. And if that breaks your heart, let it. Because it's breaking the outer man so that the inner man of the Spirit can feast itself on the table that God wants to give to you to eat. Psalm 27, 13 to 14 says, I am still, the same man that penned our psalm said this, I am still confident of this. I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord. Be strong and take heart and wait for the Lord. Are you fed up waiting? Be strong and take heart and wait for the Lord. I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. So be strong, take heart, and wait for the Lord. Final point. Now, not when you're dead. How much have you heard of? So we're going to just square away the difficulties of today, but at some point it's all going to be made perfect in heaven. Don't think that we really do that in this house so much. We're more after, okay, what's he promised for today? That stuff in heaven is wonderful, but it's beyond our experience right now, okay? And that's where our eventual home is. That's where we're from, but we're here right now. And God says there's benefit to be found here. But how much has been swept away by saying, at that point, it's going to be all okay? And when you look into the commentaries, and the final part of that verse says, and through the length of my days, the house of the Lord in his presence shall be my dwelling place. Some commentaries say, listen, the eventual place you're going to be is where God is, which is also true. But what I'm reading here is, for the length of my days, where we are right here and now, our expectation should be that his presence and his house is where you and I get to dwell, we get to live, and we get to be. Better is one day in your courts than 1,000 elsewhere, said David. And Jesus said in John 14:23, anyone who loves me will obey my teaching. This will rock your mind if you think about this. My Father will love them, and we will come to them and make our home with them. If you haven't done it already, go home and go, where would you like to stay? I know that sounds crazy, but it's not. Jesus is saying, you do what I'm asking you to do, and we're going to come and live with you. Is it just me? You're all kind of staring at me a little bit. Is that not like, what does that even look like? He's in our house, but that sounds like it's a wee bit more than that. Can we raise up our expectations? It would be lovely if people, and sometimes they do, they'll walk into your home and go, oh, this is nice. Oh, this feels nice. And they're like, oh, is that a Yankee candle that you have? No, it's Jesus. Oh, I love the color on your walls. It just feels so refreshing and so relaxing. No, it's Jesus. Oh, your beds are so comfortable to lie in. Just wonderful. Where did you get your mattress? Get your whatever mattress you want. It's Jesus. You're all looking at me like I'm a little bit cuckoo. Cuckoo. There is a normative daily experience of life with God that we may have missed. And it's life with God. It's his presence with us, his never leaving, never forsaking presence. What we have is good. We don't discount what we have. He's in our lives and he's in our homes. And if you're here today and you don't know him, then let's get that sorted because you want to. We do have him with us, but there's more. Dallas Willard says it better than I ever could. He said, as I've said, the secret to a life without lack is rooted in our knowledge of God. Could I get the worship guys up? When that knowledge is absent from our minds, everything goes to pieces. Your primary contact with God is through your mind. And what you do with your mind is the most important choice you have to make. What we place our minds on brings that reality into our lives. If we place our minds on God, the reality of God comes into our lives. And Romans 12:2 says, don't be conformed to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. So the following question is asked to bring clarity and not condemnation. so that what is hidden might be revealed, so that you can begin to choose even further life and choose it well. Where have you made your home, and where are you dwelling? Psalm 23:6 says, just to finish, surely or only goodness, mercy, and unfailing love shall follow me all the days of my life, and through the length of my days, the house of the Lord and his presence shall be my dwelling place.
You have been listening to Destination Church Belfast Weekly Podcast. Remember to check us out at www.destinationchurchbelfast.co.uk and have a great week.